Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of Cinemental.
Now, this I can do.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
I don't give a crap if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15-hooker gangbang.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of the movie podcast that we can only hope you enjoy listening to as much as we enjoy making. My name is Steve Hobicki, and as always, I'm here with Hassan Godwin and Latham Conger III.
Hello.
I said hello. Hello, world. Today's guest is a storyteller from San Diego, California, living in Madison, Mississippi. He's an award-winning writer of comic book short stories and short films, but spends most days directing creative as an ad man. Check him out at jamesninnis.com and follow him online under the hand on a lime.
Just wherever you want, any citrus.
Any citrus will have him. Follow him online under the handle at jamesninnis, all one word, no caps. We welcome James Ninnis to the show. Good evening,
hey guys.
My friend. How are you?
I'm great. That was wonderful. I'm going to be thinking about citrus the entire evening now.
Fantastic. I know. I wish I had a lime up here for my Pellegrino, but what am I going to do? So what's everybody, how was everybody's week? All right. I mean, a short week.
Yeah. What are you guys doing? What's happening on the 4th where you guys are at?
We have no fireworks by us in Illinois. It's going to be a pretty homegrown fireworks night at every house down the street. So,
and I live 5 miles away from West Point, so we have fireworks year round. So it's just called artillery. So
yeah, I am absolutely not worried about the fireworks here in New York, because they've been going off at maybe 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning randomly since I don't know, maybe about a month ago.
We've had people setting fireworks off nightly around us for the last 6 weeks.
Why is that a thing? I missed the reason.
I think there's some kind of Reddit, you know, there's something going around. I'm honestly not kidding. I think there's some, because it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And nobody has this kind of spontaneity, you know, no large group has this level of spontaneity where everyone's like, you know what we should do is light off M80s at 4 o'clock in the morning, wherever we are, you know, it's not even like a display.
It's COVID boredom. That's what I think it is.
But I mean, it's coordinated though. How do people in California know that the people in the Bronx, you know, or in New York in general, are setting off fireworks at 2 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the
it's
morning?
It's a global pandemic, Hassan.
Because
everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Okay. Just across the board, I think there's a larger percentage of people with a much more inordinate amount of free time, and a lot more people are, you know, who aren't working or aren't paying attention to the clock. And, you know, they're up at 2 o'clock watching South Park and they decide, hey, I'm going to go light a firecracker. This ought to be funny.
If it was a firecracker, it wouldn't be a problem. Well,
true. Fair enough.
A thing happening here that I'm just too old and out of touch to know about. Like,
yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
I'm missing something.
Yeah. It's part of some protest thing I don't understand, but I wish them the best. It's not happening by me, so they can keep it up.
Yeah, as long as it's only firecrackers.
Yeah,
then, you know,
that's
have at it.
That's right.
I sleep too heavily to be worried about waking up and woken up by random bursts of sound outside the window.
Yeah, so. Nothing. Wait, once I'm asleep, nothing wakes me up.
Yeah,
except for the cat jumping on my face. But other than that,
That should do it, though, Steve.
Well,
yeah,
but I go right back to sleep. So.
Don't do that again, cat.
After flinging the cat over to the pile of clothes into the laundry basket. All right, so James, one of the things we do on the show is, real briefly at the beginning, we kind of go through and see if there's anything. It's been a short week for us. We have a segment called News That Gives Us Fits, which is just entertainment stuff that just makes us, you know, shake our heads and act a little batty. So, some news that gives us fits.
No, no.
So I have one thing that I ran across this week. So there's a new movie coming to Netflix in July, I believe, called Enola Holmes, which is Netflix has taken the Sherlock Holmes canon. Oh, yeah. And this is his younger sister, Enola. And so all of the Sherlock Holmes stories, all the original Sherlock Holmes stories, excuse me, are all in the public domain. There's no question about it now. So the estate of Arthur Conan Doyle has taken it upon themselves to sue Netflix over Enola Holmes. So I saw this and was immediately confused because I'm like, how are you suing them? Everything that you're basing their idea on is in the public domain.
It's the public domain, yeah.
Why, you know, I want to know, because this actually affects a couple of things we're working on with Printed in Blood, where we're building some projects around public domain films and stuff. So apparently the later Sherlock Holmes stories written after World War I, after Arthur Conan Doyle had lost, I believe, a brother and a son, he decided that when he after World War I, that Sherlock Holmes, who had always been very standoffish and very kind of cold towards everyone around him, being the cool analytical guy that he is, decided that he needed to be more human and he needed to humanize Sherlock Holmes and make him more empathetic and respect women and do all those modern things. So the estate of Arthur Conan Doyle is now stating that Netflix has built their new show more on the idea of an empathetic and emotional Sherlock Holmes, as opposed to the cold analytical Sherlock Holmes that we all know and love. And therefore is now a target for them to sue, you know? And again, it's the guy in the room with the deepest pockets is what it comes down to. I mean, they figure Netflix will write us a check to go away and, you know, this will all disappear. But it just, it never ceases to amaze me. With everybody making Sherlock Holmes based product over the last 10 or 15 years and them not being able to get anything out of it, clearly, obviously had to irk them. And for them to finally see a channel to go down or a path to go down towards possible riches.
Finally got him.
Yeah. You know, oh, you finally did it.
Finally got him.
You made a character with some feelings. We got you.
Wasn't there a Sherlock Gnome movie?
No. There was.
Sherlock Gnome movie. Here's the thing. Nobody sued them.
Yeah.
But a Sherlock that's kind of women, too far.
Yes.
There either yes, is exactly. or there should be.
No, we've gone too far.
That's right.
Well, it's a known fact that the gnomes are not legally savvy, so they could have sued, and they just did.
Did you just know, say a gnome busy. Fact? Is that what you said?
Yes,
that's what he said. Fact.
I just want to make sure.
They paid him off in mushrooms.
They've got a lot of lawn work to do. Oh, you know, they don't have.
That's
it. Right. Well, I'm not going to stop.
They're mostly landscapers at heart.
Yeah.
I don't understand. If it's in the public domain, then what could they possibly sue for?
Because the later stories, the ones he wrote post World War I, are not quite in the public domain.
How many years is it? 90? 80?
So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, it would have to be 100, right? Or close to 100.
Whatever it is those stories are not quite clear
okay,
yet.
Okay, well.
Is basically what it comes down to. So they still have, it's essentially their last straw. It's the last thing that they have any power to try and defend.
Before they all die in their gigantic mansion?
Apparently. Yeah. I
probably watching Sherlock Gnome.
Yeah.
Yes. Sherlock Gnomes. Exactly.
Looking for loopholes. I know there's something here.
Yeah. It's just, that was my piece. I saw, although I did see one that made me think of you, Hassan, today. Uh-oh. Did you see the massive rumor mill that's starting to swirl about the Star Wars sequels being removed from canon?
Yeah. Well,
is that your story, Lay?
That was what I was going to go with. So
go with it.
I mean, it's just, you know, they're talking about rebooting the Star Wars franchise. And, you know, I just don't, you know, Disney, and I just don't. You know,
I can't see it as being real, though. I can't see that.
It's right. You see, The problem is this rumor comes from, I shouldn't say the problem. The only thing that gives this any sort of weight at all is this rumor comes from someone that in the past has been very accurate with their information about upcoming stuff out of Disney and Lucasfilm. And that's why it's being given any sort of weight at all, and not even being reported on. Which I think if
exactly, because they're going to reboot all nine.
No. They're just going. It's going to take this. Basically, it's going to turn. It's something I.
One to again, three and seven to nine would be erased.
Oh, I didn't actually hear the prequels. I only heard the sequels.
I heard both.
Yeah, I only heard the sequels. I heard Last Jedi specifically.
What I basically heard was something that had to do with the Emperor has this room full of mirrors that he would go into, and by channeling the Force through it, he is able to open up these pocket dimensions and create these all. And basically, it was going to turn films 7, 8, and 9 into basically Star Wars Elseworlds.
That's horrible.
And that they would be able to go.
Yeah, that whatever that area was depicted in the Rebels cartoon.
Yes, that's what was referenced in the article. Was that it was partially built around this concept out of Rebels, and then there was something else too. There was like one other bit that was part of one of the other more recent things, like maybe this last round of Clone Wars episodes or something.
Could be.
I feel like the last two episodes of the series were all about retconning what came before, and maybe someone should have learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Like perhaps we just let shit go. Can I cuss, by the way? I didn't.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, let shit go. It's okay.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't acknowledge those three movies. I mean, they happened. There's nothing I can do about it. I don't want to do anything about them, but I don't like them. But I don't believe that you could just erase something just because you don't like it. You know, I just stop there, you know, right around when those three start, that's pretty much where I kind of get off the bandwagon, but I don't think you can erase them. I mean, they just happened. It's kind of crazy. And there was 150 different ways of course correct while they were making them, and they decided not to. So they're going to spend another exorbitant amount of money to try to remake them. That's insanity. They might do something like that in the TV shows where they suggest that those movies didn't happen without actually saying them in the process of,
right,
you know, whatever. But I don't see them remaking episodes 7, 8, and 9. That's
Luke slipped in the shower, hit his head, had a dream.
Clone Wars made me love the prequels. Why can't they just do something like that with the last three?
There's so much space. You know, Knights of the Old Republic. There's so much stuff that they could go back to. Mm-hmm. Why worry about what's already there?
Supposedly, their new expanded universe is supposedly going to be in the Old Republic. You know, it's going to take place way back in the past. So, I mean, maybe they'll make movies from that. But I just don't believe those new movies can be saved, quote-unquote saved. But they happened. So it's just, you know, it's like a bad season of a television show you like. It just, we just got to get through it, you know? If you're in the camp of the people who didn't like them in the first place, because there are millions of people who did like them. So,
right,
you know, what's to be, you're not going to win. You're going to erase them and you're going to piss off the millions who love them, or you're going to keep them and continue to piss off the millions who didn't. So, I mean, you might as well leave it where it is. You made your money.
I don't think it's affectable. I don't think it doesn't matter what they do with the property. They put out anything, it'll be watched. That's how ingrained it is in the culture. I mean,
except for Solo.
Yeah, but even that did well.
It still made money.
I mean,
it did. It did. You know, but it didn't make enough.
They're going to spend $200 million a movie and they're going to make back $1 billion on it. So I mean, for them, they're like, who cares?
There's literally, you know, what would they have to do to make something fail in the Star Wars universe, you know? Honestly, I mean, it would take extreme effort to be awful,
or Luke Skywalker and the Crystal Skull,
or controversial. Well, even that, I mean,
even that made money.
Even that made money. That's a close to untouchable property. So it really doesn't matter what they do. So,
well, let's go on to let's move on to something a little more what I believe will probably be entertaining, because I am very anxious to hear Latham's take on this. So James's film is Annihilation.
Start from the beginning.
Let me see him. He's extremely ill.
You have to tell me where he was, what he was doing.
It was his decision to go in. It's something they termed the Shimmer. We've sent in drones and teams of people, but nothing comes back.
But something has.
You need to know what's inside. So do I.
It's beautiful.
It's destroying everything.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Directed by Alex Garland with a running time of 115 minutes. Five women venture into an area of extraterrestrial influence to investigate the cause and disappearance of multiple teams of previous explorers. Will what they find alter life as we know it on Earth forever? James, why Annihilation?
I am a sucker for sci-fi horror. That is my sweet spot. A lot of my favorite films, period, are in sci-fi horror. And I really, really like Alex Garland. I think it's hard to say he's new to the scene anymore, but ever since, was it Ex Machina? No.
Ex Machina.
I've been watching him all the way up through Devs, which just came out. I think he has an uncanny ability to take a story that's with complicated intricacies and actually put it out there in a way that's refreshingly not always clear and not always as A to B as maybe it should be. I know I leave a lot of his movies confused and have to chew on stuff. And I like those kinds of movies. I like the movies where you leave and you talk to your friends and you argue for 2 hours about what actually happened and what is true. And ultimately you leave in that. I don't fucking know. And I think Garland does that really, really well.
I think this film, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Alex Garland. This, after I saw Ex Machina, it actually drove me back to his debut novel, The Beach, because I had never seen the film, but I read the novel first just because I knew it wasn't sci-fi. I knew it wasn't, but it is one of the best books I've ever read. And I eventually saw the movie, and the movie was fine, but that book, if you haven't read The Beach, Hassan, have you read that?
No, I haven't.
I think you would really enjoy it.
All right. It's on my list.
Latham, you had not seen this, correct?
Right. I just watched it for the first time yesterday.
Okay. So, Zahn, you'd seen it.
Yes, I have.
Okay. I've seen it. So Latham, we'll go with you first as being the only virgin to the Annihilation story.
Well,
first of all, real quick, has anyone here read the book?
I have.
All right. So three of us have. Okay. Latham, go ahead.
Yeah. I've heard the book is completely different contextually. Like he did the best he could with unfilmable material. Is that close to a fair assumption? Oh. I mean, some of it is obviously filmable, but it's a different movie than a book, right?
There's a specific reason for that.
What is that reason?
The reason is he did not want to, when he went back to write the screenplay, when they bought the rights to do this as a film, he didn't want to make an exact version of the book. So he purposely did not go back and reread it. He wrote his screenplay from what his memory of the book was. And that's why there's so many differing, the core ideas of this are there, but there's a lot of difference in what happens in the book. Let me tell you something. I did not read the second book or the third book in the trilogy. James, did you finish the trilogy?
I barely finished the first book. I'm sure we'll get into that later.
Let me tell you, reading that book, and the book is short. It's 160, 180 pages maybe. It is one of the single most frustrating things to read that I, as an adult, have ever put in front of my eyeballs.
Yeah, that would be my assessment of it as well.
I know I have friends of mine who thought the movie was confusing, and I'm like, don't ever go near the book. I go, it will make you angry. Latham, the movie.
Well,
because I know you have feelings about Ex Machina.
Yeah, he's only directed two films. I mean, Devs. Devs is more of a TV show, so, or TV miniseries. I don't know how long it is. So he's directed two movies. I had a problem with Ex Machina. I thought the first two thirds was great, And the last third was a big letdown. So I tried to erase that and not be partial going into this as him being the same director of this. So while I was watching it, I started to see similarities. We have a brilliantly shot film that looks awesome. I mean, he gets it. He gets how to set his art direction, his mood, everything, and keep it uniform throughout. And that may sound like something everyone can do, but in hard-edged science fiction films, I don't think that's an easy task. And he also, he's taking on what most people are calling a unique science fiction idea. And that's why a lot of people like this movie like it, is because the basic science fiction story behind this is somewhat unique and hasn't been done before. Maybe aspects of it have, but not everything.
Agreed.
So, you know, I'm watching it and love the first third, love the second third. And then, I don't know, if you're going to put this much effort into a film looking this good and setting up a concept that grips you and grabs you and has you as you follow the characters into it, I just have a problem with some of the plotting of this. And I think that ultimately what bothered me and made me not like it that much, I mean, my rating for it's going to be 2 3/4. We talk about high rate stuff. So I'm not even going to give it 3. I really don't like the last half hour. The effects in the lighthouse, I don't know. It's like they took a step down when we're spoiling now, right? So I guess I should say spoiler. When her mirror entity comes to light, I just didn't buy it. I felt like I was watching a video game and no longer watching a visionary movie. And that really bothered me. I don't like simple plot conceits that can be fixed with writing. Suddenly,
can you give an example?
Yeah, when the three girls are all tied up suddenly, and the one girl has the other three tied up. That was bothersome to me. I don't like how you have this mirror entity that's mirroring everything she's doing, and then somehow she suddenly finds a way for the entity to not mirror what she's doing and get away. That bothered me. I don't like the movie's main theme, at least for me. I mean, I read a little bit about the themes of it online. One was, it's all a metaphor for cancer, which I'm not buying that one at all. The more clear one is that it's as human beings and people, how we self-destruct and ruin ourselves. And
yes.
If that's your theme, why aren't you ending it with her doing that with the grenade at the end? I mean, I did not like the last scene. I don't like how it ends. I think that's just been done before in so many different types of movies. I didn't think that was revolutionary or special or the way it should end, with now these two new alien entities existing and now they're going to figure out what comes next. I mean, that's the opposite of Annihilation in my point. And I don't want to trash this too much. I enjoyed a lot of it. I enjoyed certain scenes. The scene with the bear thing coming in while they're on the chairs, that's an awesome scene.
Hell yeah.
I like a lot of the subtlety where, what's her name, Tessa Thompson starts turning into a tree or a flower or whatever, and then you never see the end of it. That's cool. I really like that open-endedness. I think that's what James was saying too. Like he tends to not reveal everything at times with his films, I like that a lot. I just, in the end, I wasn't all that impressed with what I was watching. I think someday he's going to make a great film, but if I were him, you know, you got your detail, you got your special effects, you got your look, you got your idea. Just get that script rewritten one last time with that plotting. That's what I would say.
Let me ask you a question, I know prior to this, you had issues with Ex Machina. So what I'm wondering is seeing him, his potential as a filmmaker going into it and kind of knowing the level of positivity that his films generally hold as far as reviews, critics, fans, whatever. Do you think that you were holding him to a somewhat higher bar?
That that's at the beginning. That's what I said. I didn't want to hold him with any prejudice. I know he's written other films, but this is his second one that he's directed. And I kind of put him in the same vein as Denis Villeneuve, who, like, he did a film. I don't know how many of you have seen Enemy. I don't think Enemy is a great film, but it has aspects in it that
show. It's Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
I'm sorry?
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Hell yeah, Enemy.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Okay. The have you two seen it, Steve?
No.
Okay.
On, like, well, Netflix or something now, I think.
It's the one where he finds his doppelganger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's worth it. Like, you start to see his genius with the last shot of the film. The last shot of that movie is brilliant, and it's worth not repeating. It's so good. The rest of the movie doesn't compare to the last shot, because the last shot, you are like, you will be startled. It's just a unique ending, but you see that and you're like, wow, this guy's going to make something better someday. And then he made Arrival. He made the Blade Runner sequel. I think he did the
Prisoners.
Oh yeah. I forgot. Great. Prisoners. And then the drug movie, in Mexico?
Sicario.
Sicario. Did he direct that?
He directed the first one, I believe.
Yeah. The first one.
Yeah.
So yeah, he progressed. And I think Alex Garland, obviously he's written a lot. So I just looked at what he's written. You know, I like Sunshine. That's a really good script that I think kind of falters near the end, but it's good. I like 28 Days Later or 28 Weeks?
28 Days Later.
Yeah, I mean, another good film. Yep. I just think
with a good ending that time.
I'm sorry.
28 Days Later actually had a good ending. He seems to have a problem with endings.
He seems to have run with the last, at least in my opinion. I mean, I can see how, like James said, this is definitely a movie you want to talk about. And on that level, it's great. There's a lot of things to discuss, what the movie's about, the themes, what the sci-fi message of it is, all that. I think his better films are to come. And I think, you know, I don't like reading like, oh, this is a masterpiece and it's going to be remembered as the sci-fi masterpiece of the 2010s. And I'm just, I don't know. I think there's just, I think that's going a little far. I know we want to anoint everything as the new classic science fiction film, but I'm going to like Primer better than this.
There's a good one.
Primer cost $7,000. So.
Latham ain't buying it. That's all it is.
I'm not buying it. It's worth, it's definitely worth watching. It's definitely worth going after. I'm just looking at my notes here. Oh, the other thing too. I like him sending in five female characters and they're the stars. That's great. That's, when's the last time we saw that? I mean, that's brilliant. Except then you only get a sentence of background on, or two sentences of background on three of them. And that's, I mean, develop those characters more and make me care more about them. I didn't care when any of them didn't make it. I'll shut up now. Let someone else talk about this film.
Son?
I kind of agree. To put it more succinctly, I don't like when stories just decide at the end to become incoherent, you know, or theoretically incoherent. Like, it just decides, okay, I'm going to give you tangible information from here up until a point, and I'm just going to start to suggest things, you know, or I'm just going to get esoteric about everything and not conclude. So it's like, okay, somewhere along the line, a guy just decided, look, I can't really sell this. This is my impression. I'm not saying this in general. I can't really sell this. So I'm just going to start, fucking around with imagery.
There's this lighthouse and this.
Yeah. And
there's a hole in the lighthouse.
And maybe it's just me, but I'm not sure what about the movie. I've seen the movie two or three times and I'm not sure what's unclear. What do you guys look at and think
what's
that you don't get?
What's the main sci-fi premise of this film? What are we talking about? I mean, what is the cool, unique thing about this film? That this shimmer is a prism? Is that what we're supposed to take as the main cool idea of this? I'm literally asking.
Obviously a meteorite crashes into this lighthouse and the alien intelligence, whatever you want to call it, you know, starts to basically terraform to, you know, but its version of terraforming is essentially, you know, what they start trying to dissect as they go in there, but they can only look at it from a human being standpoint, because that's the only data sets we have to apply to it is what we know as human beings.
Okay.
And I feel like that's fine. You know, if to define what's going on for the viewer, you're going to have to go that direction, because what are you going to do? Give them, you know, gibberish, you know, as your explanation?
Well, Arrival did the same thing. I just think it did it better. And even though I didn't fully understand Arrival until after I read about it afterwards, it made more logical sense. Whereas this, I don't know, it just seemed, I agree with Hassan in that it just seemed like, I haven't read the book, so I don't, and like he said, he only read it once. And
it makes no difference. It honestly makes no difference.
They're not going to help.
I want to hear James talk about it more, because he's the one that recommended this. So I'd like to hear.
I think to answer the sci-fi premise, I think the gimmick is the refracting DNA, right? I mean, that's why everyone went to see this. You saw the trailer and you saw the deer with the flowers on the antlers and the albino alligator with the crazy teeth. And you see all these cool gimmicky things. That's what's going to put, you know, butts in seats.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Yeah. You know, that's the visual part of the film, right? Which the book doesn't have. Like it's not as visual. The book is not as visual as the movie, right? It just,
wow. Okay. Interesting.
So they
that not is, even close.
That is upped up a lot for the movie. If we're talking about themes of the film, I think you nailed it with self-destruction as an overarching thing. I would argue that this particular movie is not about the meteor or the aliens or even self-destruction overall, but the one character overcoming her own tendency for self-destruction, right? I mean, it starts with her cheating on her husband before they even get there, right? She sabotages her marriage, right, in a way. He leaves her, she feels guilty. He comes back, he's broken. She goes in to chase it to try to fix what she broke. On the way, she sees these other people breaking and she actually encourages them to break so that she can move forward, right? She's continually fucking people over to get to the end. And she doesn't care if she dies, right? She just needs to know the truth. That's her goal, is getting there. Yeah. Now, what's interesting to me is that she finally gets to the end, she gets the lighthouse, and she has an opportunity to die and chooses not to. She has an opportunity. She has learned the truth as much as anybody can learn the truth in this particular setting. And she has an opportunity to end just like her husband. And she sees, she is relieved of her mission. Her mission was to save her husband. And she is relieved of that mission when she sees the video and her husband is no longer there. She now has no reason to feel guilty. She is relieved of her guilt, right? She can still feel bad for what she did, but she can't save the man she came to save. All of that is gone. And yet, she struggles to go through and survive, because ultimately her survival is stronger than her self-destruction in that moment. And all those other women, it wasn't, right? Even when it's not sad. I mean, when Tessa Thompson dies, I don't feel bad for her.
Did she die though, or just turn into a tree? I mean,
I mean, that's essentially what I, she basically, but the thing was, the
corner and,
out of all the characters going into that, other than Dr. Ventress, who clearly was on a self-destructive path because of dying of cancer. So she clearly had absolutely no interest at all in ever coming back. So it's like, if she was never going to come back, it didn't matter, because all she wanted to do was get to the other end of the room. But Tessa Thompson was a cutter.
She was cutting because she didn't feel anything. You had the lady who lost her daughter. There was the other one who, I forget what...
She was a paramedic from Chicago, but they never gave her any sort of like...
That was a problem too. A paramedic from Chicago disabling three people and tying them up. Make her a soldier.
I think they mentioned she's ex-military though.
Did she?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're all... I'm not sure. I mean, but that's fine. If she's ex-military, that explains.
But they all have a thing. I mean, there's even that scene in the canoe where they're going and the one basically tells her, like, we're all broken and here's
everything. Yeah, right, that's the exposition scene. Yep.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I think that scene is probably done better in the book. There's more showing than telling. But I think
it's very quick. It's like,
Yeah. And I don't think it's perfect, right? I agree with everything you said about the special effects. That actually pulled me out a little bit when Mirror Man shows up. I wasn't stoked.
At first
that.
It was okay. It's just eventually it got, like I said, as me and Steve have talked about before, it's like the mummy. The mummy is like watching a video game you can't play. That's how I feel like when I watch that movie. And that's how I felt at the end of this. I wanted to pick up a controller and do something. And it was, you know, it's not bad effects. It just seemed like a level below the rest of the film.
It felt like less time was spent on that than the rest of the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's fair.
It just seems like they front loaded all this imagery and symbolism into a story because they didn't have an ending.
Boy, I mean,
so they're going to give you as much information as possible so that they could have you piece it together. But basically, they don't have the promise of the film is like, what's inside the shimmer? These people are going to go inside this thing and find out exactly what happened to the last teams that they sent in and find out what's inside this thing. We get inside and all sorts of appropriately wonderfully creepy and disturbing things start to happen. They witness a lot of things. They witness the mutation of animals, or the cohabitation of animals and fauna and all that other stuff. They get to the lighthouse, which is the epicenter of this entire situation. And then it just starts to get impressionistic. Instead of, in my opinion, instead of revelatory, right?
Except for when she saw that her husband had blown himself up with the grenade, I thought that was cool. And then she watched the video. I thought, perfectly toned at that point. But after that, I agree with Hassan.
And then, you know, the sequence of her fighting with herself, and, you know, I understand what you're saying about she's deciding not to die or whatever. I'm not saying that the outcome or the information is wrong. I'm not disagreeing with anything that anybody here has said about the actual nature of the story in and of itself. I'm just saying at some point it's a very coherent, tangible objective that decides to become subjective like halfway through. And it irked me. It really annoyed me. It's explaining. Now I'm not going to explain anything. You know, now just figure out, just decide how you feel about this on your own. So look, it's a perfectly good story. It's got great special effects. It's got fantastic actors in it. And yeah, the bear scene the bear scene was fucked up. Okay.
Oh yeah.
It was appropriately fucked up.
It was the most disturbing scene in the movie, I thought, personally.
Yeah, and one of the most disturbing scenes I've seen in a long time.
Yes, right? That, 100% that.
Yes.
But it's like, okay, then you're upping the ante on the horror, you know? You're upping the ante on, okay, this place is not a safe place. It's fucking with all of us. It's making us all go crazy. It's making, you know, we're discovering through the dismantling of ourselves what happened to everybody who came before us. And because of the nature of how we're researching this particular thing, there's no way we could get a message out to let everybody else know that you shouldn't be coming in here, you know, and that eventually this thing is going to spread across the planet and take everything over, which would have been a fantastic ending. But instead, they just decided, oh, I'm going to burn the whole thing down and I'll destroy the shimmer. And then I'll get out and I'll continue to live with this alien creature who kind of looks like my husband as penance for my being a dipshit through the most of my life. It's just kind of like, why did you resolve this? You know, it's more of a wonderfully horrific aspect of the, you know, that this, there's no stopping this thing.
Yeah, it's called annihilation. This is
that this is a completely different ecosystem that's going to eat the planet, and it's going to eat us all, or have us all eat ourselves, you know, in context of self-doubt and you know, all the other psychological foibles that it was exploiting as these people were going further and further into this thing. And then it just kind of just, I'm going to resolve it with a grenade, you know? And it was, to me, it was like, okay, you know, somehow she maintains most of her humanity. She's still mostly intact, even though everybody else is coming to pieces while being in this place. You can argue it was because of her own self-destructive mentality that kept her intact. You could make a whole bunch of other observations as to why, but there's no physical explanation given to why she is still of sound mind or sound enough mind to make decisions, correct, you know, to decide not to die, to decide to destroy this thing that's trying to mimic her, that is obviously going to take over, take take her place and wander back out into the, you know, into the real world out of the shimmer. And so, and then the fact that it resolves itself, that it ends, and that it's just that she destroyed it, just kind of like left me with a, all right, what was that about?
But then she's still alien at the end. Now she's got it in her, or whatever that is.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I guess it's saying that eventually they're just, going to take over. Yeah, I guess. But then that's not as horrific. I mean, I understand it's not necessarily a horror movie. It said everything that it really was trying to say. It completed, it succeeded in its objective of being a really thought-provoking body horror kind of thriller, you know, mm-hmm. neurological, psychological thriller. And then it just, for some reason, it wrapped it up.
So,
and it was, if it just didn't wrap it up like that, it probably would have been tremendously, for me at least, tremendously more effective as a, as you know, as a cautionary tale, or as a, you know, psychological observation of the annihilation of the human spirit, or whatever else, 100 other things you want to say about it. I think it, you know, I think it brings up, it asks a lot of fantastic questions, but I think the way it just decided to resolve itself, it's like a zipper. They just zipped it up at the end and then just, you know, and then gave you a wink and a nod that, oh, it's not really over because she is, you know, it is in her now and it is taken. And I just thought it just kind of stepped on itself. You know, as the saying goes, it stepped on its own dick.
Hassan, I actually think you answered your own question, and this could be me looking too into it. I have a tendency to do that. And
I'm not listening to you. I'm not la la la.
I'll admit this. I'll admit that right now. But two observations. You know, when it breaks down the psychologist into parts, mm-hmm. and then it gets a drop of blood from the main character and begins to echo her, right, with the parts it has assimilated. I feel like at that point, and we saw this with the husband, it's no longer refracting things. It's learning how to doppelgang, how to mimic. It's trying to create, replicate what it's getting, right? And maybe it was the whole time. Right, I don't know. That's an open-ended thing. But it absorbs the blood and it tries to replicate. Every time it contacts something new, some element, some DNA, it absorbs it and tries to figure out a way to implement that with the DNA. And an interesting thing with the phosphorus grenade is it drops it and it continues to burn. And if you watch it, it drops the phosphorus grenade, it continues to burn, and then other things just light on fire. It's trying to replicate the element of the phosphorus. Its need to consume and adapt is what kills it. Its desire to take everything and bring it in is what ends up killing it. And I do think it kills it entirely. And I think the fact that you see her eye tweak at the end is a sign that her DNA did change, in fact. It's not that the aliens left over. It's that she's not the person she was. She has adapted.
Oh, 100%.
Burned out. And I also think that her husband was rebuilt enough to function now as her husband, because whatever was left of the creature has been burned away. I think the alien's gone. I think it's entirely burnt away.
All right.
But again, I have a tendency to
That makes it worse for me. That's actually
that explanation makes a lot of sense. And you just reminded me of another, the scene that bothered me the most after the fact is where Oscar Isaac, on the video where he cuts the guy open and you see the snakes.
Yeah.
I mean, that started off well, and then it ends and the one girl's like, oh no, that's a trick of light. Okay. That is not a trick of light.
That bothered me. I was like, hit rewind, watch it again.
Yeah, just watch it again. See, I don't need to see it again. That's bad writing.
Okay? That bothered me. I'm with you on that.
I mean, just,
but she was just trying to rationalize it to herself, is all it was.
Yeah, that's fair.
We as the viewer are watching the videotape, and
I agree.
We as the viewer are supposed to think that's a fucked up intestine with snakes, and they're watching the video closer than we are, and it's a trick of light. That's just don't.
Yeah, but by then they're not using their
light line, and it's fine. And but why?
But they're not being rational.
Why did he cut the guy open? And the guy was compliant until like near the end. He's like, stop, stop. He's like, stop, stop. And half his abdomen is open. You should have said stop when he first put the knife in. I wasn't buying that part that much. It was cool. It was interesting to see visually. But afterwards, I'm like, you know what? That didn't make much sense. So.
All right.
I just think, you know, I mean, look, it's a solid film.
Yeah,
It's not that it doesn't make any sense at the end with all the pieces. I just don't like the way it resolved itself.
Fair enough.
I think it was a wrap up that was a little too neat. And also, like, I appreciate your assessment of it and the fact that it, you know, its own greed, you know, or whatever you want to call the entity. But I mean, for that matter, then they could have nuked it. They could have set the whole thing on fire and then it would have resolved the situation. You would have think they would have started with that, you know, especially as brutish as we tend to be in things with things that we don't understand. You know, you would think that we would have started with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But then it doesn't matter.
Nuke is like a last option, though.
I didn't mean nuke. I mean, I just meant meant set it on fire.
Send some,
you know, like
flamethrower dudes in there.
Yeah. Especially if you start losing teams in there, you know, like you, if you said, and then in the book, they've sent like 50 teams.
Yeah, they're 12.
You know,
in the first one, it's group 12. You're right.
Yeah.
Well,
but it's a lot.
Some astronomical number before you just decide that you've had an unprecedented loss of life in this thing. And maybe that's not the way to go about, you know, and then the book is more of a study of futility and, you know, and not in a, so like the movie, I get it. I just like, I just don't like the way you wrap this up. You know, I just don't.
Hassan, do you think it would have been better if they give it, if they had given that movie? I mean, it was already not short, but like I had a friend say, and he felt very similarly to you. And his thing at the end, he said, I wish they would have given it like 20 more minutes to help me. He's like, he felt like, and this isn't what you're saying, but he felt like the movie got ahead of him. Like he was pacing with it and then it lost him for a little bit and he wasn't with it when it ended. And he was like, I wish they would have kept the pacing they had the first three quarters of the movie.
And just made it longer. I'd be fine with that.
With it. Do you think, I'm genuinely curious. Do you think if they had more time, you would have enjoyed it if they could have unpacked it a bit more?
I don't know if I feel like it was rushed necessarily. I don't know if that's my criticism of it.
Yeah.
It just felt like someone else wrote that ending. It felt like someone else wrote this entirely delicately laid out, meticulously intricate story that basically is about a woman who has messed up her entire life and is virtually suicidal and is going into this mysterious place, pretty much the same reason that Jennifer Jason Leigh is just, you know, but even she's unaware of it, you know, of how self-destructive she is. And she finds, you know, there's a lot of danger, there's a lot of terror, but there's also a lot of beauty in the way that everything is being annihilated and brought back together. And you know, and then maybe that's metaphoric for her being able to be annihilated and yet come back together as a different thing. And it's going. And then that guy died. And then his nephew came in and said, you know what I'm going to do? Grenade. And then we're going to blow this place up and we're out of here. And this is it's a AAA movie. And it just, to me, it's like, wait a minute. You were just spelling out this. You were telling me the story in this really intricate, meticulously visually symbolic way. Mm-hmm. And then you just burn it. You know, it's just, to me, I was like, so what was the point of all that? You know, like, what was the point of this? And, you know, and then you also have the very clumsy exposition from Jennifer Jason Leigh explaining what annihilation is when you don't need it explained to you at that point, because you've been seeing annihilation on 100 different fronts, 100 different versions of annihilation on the path to this place.
And that was a good nod to the book. Because they don't have names in the book.
Yeah,
right?
But annihilation in the book meant for all of them to kill themselves.
Right. So in the book, if the psychiatrist says the word annihilation, they're all hypnotized. They're all under control.
Wow.
Then you have to kill yourself. You commit suicide. So I actually like that she said the word annihilation and immediately died.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
The psychiatrist says annihilation and is immediately consumed.
That's really interesting.
But I thought
that was an interesting nod. Is all.
That's great. It's a nod, but then you know that comes off in the film as incoherent. You know, like what? You know, it's like, so it's just, I just don't understand this. If you're gonna be esoteric, become esoteric. If you're gonna be straightforward, be straightforward. If you're gonna have of exposition, then that exposition better explain things, you know?
It's the same. I agree with you. I don't think it bothered me the same level.
Well, obviously not.
I agree.
Obviously not, because you enjoy it. It's the same thing with the you know, just completely out of the blue. It was the same thing with The Last Jedi, right? I have no issue with any of the stuff that happens in that film. But when it came to explaining why did you make these decisions, it's like the writer, director, whoever, just didn't want to come up with a reason. So his answer to the question was to give us information we already had as his decision to pretty much abandon his life's mission. And it drove me nuts. Like, we already know that. We had three fucking movies explaining that. And this was before he was even goddamn born. So you're going to tell me that somewhere along the line, he just read a book and realized, oh, this is fruitless. I'm going to murder my nephew in his sleep. It was nonsense. And this is the same. This is kind of the same thing. It's like you're trying to have it all. You're trying to have your cake and eat it too, which is the wrong way of that phrase. It's trying to eat your cake and have it too. But you're trying to tell me a psychologically disturbing story.
So long as there's cake.
And then have John McClane come in and blow the whole thing up at the end, you know? And it's like, all right.
Okay. All the lighthouse needed was an elevator, right? Then it would have been.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the very end, you're going to nod again at me and saying, oh, but it's not quite resolved.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it's like, oh, fuck you. At that point, it's like, fuck
well,
you.
Well, but I think what we can't do, I think what's happening right now, though, is you're taking your understanding of the ending and imprinting the directorial intent. Like, we don't know that him saying them glowing at the end was
But
what I'm saying is you can't fault him.
I could fault him. If I didn't like it, I could fault him all I want.
I'm not saying you cannot like it. Let me finish. What I'm saying is we can't assume his intent based on our understanding.
I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't. His intent doesn't matter. It's the.
I agree.
It's all the impression that I'm being given. You know,
100%.
And the thing that what I'm saying is, because I don't know who the guy is. The guy's probably he's probably an altruistic saint who's helping cancer patients. Right. I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm saying that the work that he gave, that he presented to me, the story that he gave me. Mm-hmm. Left me feeling this particular way about it. But I didn't like how it was. I didn't like the impression I got from the story that he told me.
Sure.
And it's a compliment because I said everything up to a point. I mean, for lack of a better word, everything up to a point was brilliant.
Yeah, I wanted to know what was happening in the lighthouse. I wanted to know what was going to happen. So I was into it going into the lighthouse.
Yeah, but and then when you get to, it's like, I don't know. It's like Ripley going into the alien den, and you find out that the alien eggs are coming out of a void, a gaseous womb of a rift in reality. And they're like, wait a minute, where did all the everything was tangible?
Don't suck me into this argument because by using aliens.
I'm manipulating the board.
Like, I feel like the logic gap you're describing is just not what I experienced. And maybe that's my fault.
No, it's not maybe fault. I was giving perception. Credit, yeah.
But you're describing a lot of gaps when you talk about like the Luke Skywalker comparison or gaseous alien.
It's not a comparison to Luke Skywalker in the sense that it's the same thing. I'm using the Luke Skywalker thing to explain that when you set out to explain, you should explain. If you set a character aside, say the Jennifer Jason Leigh character, if you set a character aside to explain what you're seeing, and then you make her dialogue just as esoteric as the visuals that you're getting, then you didn't need her to be there at all. You didn't need her because she served no purpose because she didn't explain anything, other than to pretty much describe everything that you're seeing, and then, like you say, until you've read the book, and then topple over and die with no explanation.
Maybe that was like an Easter egg for the book readers. Maybe that was like...
Well, but She has the line about not knowing if it even wants. She thinks she knows what it wants. She doesn't know what it wants. And I appreciated her confusion at the end. So I just disagree with you saying that she doesn't add anything. And that's okay. We don't have to agree on that. I get it. But like, I found value in her speech. And so I'm okay with it. And that's fine. We can just agree to disagree.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were agreeing or disagreeing or anything. I thought we're just giving our impressions. I mean, you don't have to defend it if you liked it. I'm not making any accusations about anybody who liked it. You know, I'm just saying it.
Good,
you know,
because I like it.
It's the process.
I don't feel attacked at all.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can like it or dislike it. That's
okay.
I mean, I would definitely recommend anyone to watch it, and that's an important aspect of any film. Is some you would not recommend for people to waste their time on. I didn't fully love it, but I would definitely want other people to see it to get their impression of it. And I think that's important.
And that to me is a different level of accomplishment with a film. Is you can make a film that A, is both entertaining, interesting, and will cause people to have conversations, deep conversations they believe strongly about.
Sure.
After it's over, then you've accomplished, you know, that's it. It's like being a 5-tool guy in baseball. You know, if you know baseball, it's having everything, you hit every single spot, you know, and you know, most directors are lucky to be able to hit two or three if they're, you know, in a really successful film. You know, some, you know, a lot of films out there that are really great movies are just there to entertain. You walk out and you're like, that was a great story. That was I loved the acting. I loved how everything wrapped up. Boom. I don't have to think about it again. Hey, it'll win Best Picture. Great. Fantastic. But, you know, you're not going to get into a long involved conversation about it because there's nothing deep to dig
everything
into.
There is there for you to ingest and to.
Exactly. And the one thing I do like is a director who is willing, as he is in most cases, to not give you all the information purposefully. I like that idea. I like the idea of not dumbing down, which is something that's happened.
Oh, well,
what did I do?
I got nothing.
I want to add.
Everything is fine.
I want to ask.
Please continue.
I want to ask James
Namaste.
Something.
Please continue.
I want to ask James something quick, Steve. Is that okay?
Go ahead, Lee. Yeah.
Sure. James, are you a fan of David Lynch films? Because a lot of his stuff is like he won't explain what's going on. You get the bulk of it, but you don't get, you know, like Mulholland Drive. He's like, oh, it's all there. You just got to figure it out. It's all there. And no one knows what the fuck. Okay, so
yeah, I am a fan of those films, but more because I enjoy the chaos they bring.
Than
the film itself, if that makes like, I don't think I've seen any David Lynch film more than twice.
Interesting.
Like,
yeah,
I don't rewatch them because I find supreme artistic vision in them.
Yes.
Although I almost think the chaos it brings is its own.
Yeah.
Artistic. Thing which I suppose someone can make an argument for.
I've never heard it described that way. That's a unique way of talking about Lynch films. That's cool.
Chaos is just the way I describe things I don't understand.
I'm a huge fan of his, and I don't get what the fuck is going on in half his movies. So
I like the old Twin Peaks more than the new Twin Peaks.
Oh boy, we're on the same wavelength here.
Yeah, I really enjoy to Steve's point and the conversations that we're having now, especially me, Hassan and I really like, you know what I mean? I like having these conversations, and I like films that inspire conversations where you disagree.
Absolutely.
Because I learn things, right? Like even this conversation tonight, listening to Lathan and Hassan, Steve, I'm learning nothing from you, but Lathan and Hassan are helping me kind of think about what I think about the movie, right? And challenging some of the ideas I have. And I like that, which is why, by the way, I say things like we agree to disagree, because in my mind, I'm trying to process what you're bringing to me, right? Is okay, that's an interesting perspective. And I got to try to challenge myself to see things that way. And frankly, don't do that a lot, right? No. I had the same comment after Prometheus. I had an argument with two of my buddies. We saw the midnight viewing. We were up to like 7 a.m.
Wow.
Arguing. So stupid about Prometheus, and it was great. And it's one of the fondest memories I have of going to a movie, and it was fucking
that's
Prometheus,
awesome,
right?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
That's really funny. Hassan and I went to a midnight showing of Prometheus. We did not stay up till 7 arguing about it, but
no.
There were a lot of passionate Alien fans in that, and apparently we liked it for very different reasons. That's,
yeah, but I did get locked into that in the mall though that night.
Did you
they
really
close that? Yeah, they closed the garage. They put a chain up on the garage when I was trying to get out.
So you went, you had to leave where you were parked. You couldn't get the car out.
No, I had I had to lift the chain.
Oh,
I had to. While you were driving? I had to have. No, Jennifer was with me.
Oh, that's right.
So I had to lift the chain up and then drive through, and then I had to hold the chain up so she could get her car through. It was crazy.
I question the effectiveness of these chains.
Yeah, well,
it was
only for people who are by themselves.
It was in Rockland. It was in, so I mean, it's the illusion of security. It wasn't security.
That's right. So a couple of tidbits about the film. So apparently when this film had its first test screenings, one of the financial execs at Paramount had some issues and wanted changes made to the film, wanted Portman's character to be more sympathetic. He wanted a different ending so it would appeal to a wider audience. He thought that all these things were problematic.
Steve, let me stop you real quick too. I was one of those Paramount execs. I just wanted to throw that in there. Okay.
Well, then I'm sorry that Scott Rudin kicked you in the nuts.
Okay.
So producer Scott Rudin, who had final cut on the film, talked it over with Garland and basically sided with the director and said, "I'm not making those changes." And that is why this film was not released in theaters internationally. It was sold directly to Netflix.
Wow.
It only came out in theaters in US and Canada, and it went direct to Netflix overseas markets. It was like 3 weeks later or 2 weeks later, something
totally
like
forgot
that.
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was never released in theaters internationally, partially because I think the execs were pissed off, probably. And so they're like, "Well, fine, then we're not going to release your movie into theaters." You know, it's a spiteful whatever.
Did it make money back in the end, Steve?
Estimated budget on it was, I believe, around 40, and box office was 43. Now, that being said,
that was 40? Wow.
Yeah, that's the same thing I said. That's why
they like him. He gets the big bang for his buck.
You better believe it.
That's impressive.
So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, after P&M costs, I would have to say if they were probably lucky to break even.
Well, and I wonder what Netflix played for global distribution.
Yeah, there you go. That's the other thing. That and then after, obviously, you know, DVD sales and whatever else was culled into the mix.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Frances McDormand was originally considered for Dr. Ventress before Jennifer Jason Leigh got the role. Other options besides before Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton.
Hey.
Yeah. Julianne
who plays that character, but okay.
So an MCU check-in on this movie. We've got Jane Foster, Valkyrie, and Wong all in this film from the MCU.
Well, that's where Valkyrie went after she turned into the tree. She went to Valhalla.
So. That's right. This I found kind of interesting. There's two other pieces of source material that people have. Well, one of them people pointedly said Vandermeer. They felt Vandermeer took the idea from. For the core concept. So there was a Russian short novel called Roadside Picnic, which was optioned and turned into a film by Andrei Tarkovsky called Stalker.
Oh, sorry.
Have you seen it?
Oh yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Please pick a Tarkovsky movie one of these times. Please. Sorry, go on.
Well, it's funny because I grabbed it today because I'm really interested in seeing it.
Well, don't take your Valium.
Wow. Okay. So the basic idea of Stalker is that there's an area that's off limits that's hinted at or told because of some sort of alien interference, whatever. And so there's these guys that make livings guiding people into this quarantine area to a special room that apparently if you're brought there, and you make it to the special room, this room will grant you a wish, or your wishes will be fulfilled, or whatever. So anyway, this, from what I understand, this movie is about the trip to getting this guy or whatever to this room. So Vandermeer claimed that he had never heard of or seen Tarkovsky's film or read the story before he did the book.
I believe
the other
with Susan Collins.
Yeah, right. The other one, which
Susan Collins' explanation,
which I actually find more interesting, are the similarities between this story, or at least portions of it, especially the way Garland has taken it away from the original book, and Lovecraft's Color Out of Space.
Oh yeah,
which especially that new version.
Which
that movie tripped me out.
Was that fucking great? Didn't I tell you that was great?
I was not ready.
What, the new one?
Yes.
Directed by the guy who did Hardware or whatever his name is?
Yeah, Richard Stanley.
I want to see it. I really want to see it.
Oh, it's so good.
I don't know which movie we're talking about.
Color Out of Space.
H.P. Lovecraft's Color Out of Space, the new one with Nick Cage. Believe it or not.
Yeah, I really want to see it. If you two liked it, then I'm in.
It is an absolute blast.
Great.
Yeah, it'll be a fun one to talk about.
That's your next appearance, James.
Yeah, there you go. We'll do Colorado Space. Yeah, so that's all I got.
Oh, hold on a minute.
Think that we should probably go down the tubes.
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Has left himself lined up. All right, so you all have the posters. Annihilation's going to take some time because there's 50 of them.
Wow. Well, let's get on that, Stevie.
Yep, right there. Everybody got them?
Yeah. I'm up now, but yeah, go ahead.
All right, so the first one is just the U.S. advance. It's also, this image was also used as one of the general, just one of the main release posters as well. This is another one of those movies that beyond the domestic image. The next one was part of the program once they had announced that Netflix was going to take it. This was the Netflix promotional image. I don't know that this was actually made as a one sheet, but it's one sheet in scale. And so I think this is probably used anywhere that anyone would have used a one sheet image as promotion and marketing. They just did this for, you know, the international markets. But that image there is the one that's kind of used the most out of any of them, any of the poster stuff for the official release.
And it also, the little tagline supports the theme of it being about self-destruction too.
Right. So right. And then the next one is the German version, obviously, with just it in German. I found two or three versions of this poster that looked literally exactly the same as this. And they just have the all the information is just in whatever languages. So the next one is China did actually a bunch of posters for their release there. There were multiple images, plus they did a full string of character posters. So if you go past 3 to 4, I only put in Natalie Portman, Oscar Isaac, and Jennifer Jason Leigh's posters. But there were posters of all 5 women and Oscar Isaac that were done. So there was a whole line of character posters.
Why Oscar Isaac? Just because it's Oscar Isaac?
Probably. I mean, he's second billed in the movie. So
I don't feel like he should have been, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
They're not really flattering Jennifer Jason Leigh here with this poster, okay? It's like I just came out of a meth lab. Seriously. I mean, come on.
Well, that and the other thing, interesting thing, too, I found that, you know, they did the thing with Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac where they did the little trick to the eye. But they also did it to Jennifer Jason Leigh as well. Now, the one thing I didn't do is look at the other poster. I'm assuming all the posters, they did that to the eyes on all of them.
I guess.
Well, it would make sense. I mean, they all get touched, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, once you cross that barrier, it's pretty much. That was the one thing about that movie, that the one thing that I thought was actually really interesting was that they show them kind of walking in, and the next scene is them waking up at the camp, and they're all like, how the fuck long have we been here?
No, no, no. What's more important than that is what the next scene is actually her affair.
That's right. That's
she walks in, and the first thing you see is her having sex with not her husband. And
oh, okay.
She wakes up.
All right.
Because they didn't have a good transition there, so they used that for, yeah, that's a good point.
Or it's the beginning of her self-destructive behavior. I know Hassan thinks I'm right.
Yeah, that's...
So
we'll just move on.
So right? From there, we move directly. We move directly into the fan-made posters. So this first one is by Adam Jaresko, and it's it's the guy who was in the swimming pool.
Yeah, that was my favorite design of the film.
Beautiful set design. Set piece, yeah.
The way it told a story of his like movement and suffering.
Yep.
With absolutely static. You can see. I've seen comic books. I've read a lot of comic books, and they can't tell as much motion without movement as this set piece did.
Yeah.
I mean, it really just, I don't know. I can't praise that moment.
It was stunning. It was absolutely stunning.
This poster reminds me of Midsommar.
Yep. Lots of color.
Yeah. The flowers. So
the next one is by Andika Pilot. And this is just a Photoshop photo montage.
Yeah.
Brightly colored. Next one, Andrew Roland. He throws... Wow. Yeah, this one actually reminds me a little bit of, there's a guy, an artist who we work with a lot named Chris Malbon, who does imagery a little bit like this. He kind of got everything in there.
It's great. I love this. This should be the poster.
Guys, we never even talked about the tattoo.
Yeah.
How she ends up with her friend's tattoo by the end of the movie because
it's not her friend's tattoo.
Isn't it one of the other girls? It's the girls in the
squad. The other girl. Without going back and looking again, I don't know if she has it going in.
She doesn't have it going in. I know.
Not Natalie Portman.
Oh, the other
girl.
Yeah.
Because if you notice, the guy on the swimming pool, on the swimming pool wall that we were just discussing, has the same tattoo on his arm.
Oh, that's cool. That's a nice little detail. That.
And it's a snake eating its own tail. It's an Ouroboros.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's saved in the shape of an infinity.
Yes.
Like, usually Ouroboros is just the circle.
Yep.
This Ouroboros is actually in the inverted infinity symbol.
Correct. Infinite I like destruction.
How the O in this poster is the dude in the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's awesome. This is a great poster.
Yeah, this is a good one. I like this.
Yeah, you put some thought into it.
Love it.
So the next one is Ashraf Omar, much more designy. But I do like the fact that it's hand-drawn, at least, and not just a Photoshopped image.
Yeah.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, that's funny. What do you know? The next one's really good. Barrett Biggers.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude.
Jeez. That's just a fucking great image.
Holy cow, man. It's taking me 50 years to draw this.
We didn't talk about the house either.
The house mirroring her house?
The house is her house.
Yes.
Okay, keep going, Steve. You're doing great.
I didn't notice that. That's
you guys crazy. Didn't notice that when they walk into the house where the bear attack happens. When they walk in,
outside is her house too.
Yeah, when they walk in the house and outside, because they walk up, and then where it really hits you is when they walk in to the foyer, and the stairwell is the same exact foyer that the husband appeared in and walked upstairs when she was painting the bedroom.
Yeah, I missed that.
That house they stay in is a mirror of her house.
The exterior shot is literally the same angle they show her house.
Just overgrown. It's overgrown.
The same shot.
Yeah.
She just dropped a grenade to fix everything.
You're getting close to gaining a quarter star here. Keep talking.
Next is Bella Grace. Nice image, nice colors. Builds everything in around the Ouroboros design.
Yeah, that's neat.
Uses the alligator head as one is the eating side of it.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah,
smart one. Clever.
She's a really smart designer. She's got some beautiful work.
Nice.
Can I just say that I like that this doesn't have what's his face?
Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, I actually really like Oscar Isaac. I just don't
know why.
To be in all the promotions for this movie.
I actually rewatched Ex Machina today just because.
Yeah.
Still love it.
He's better than that.
He was filming this movie while he was filming The Force Awakens.
They were filming both.
Walking from set to set.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, really?
They were on neighboring studios.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't get confused.
Why? He didn't have any dialogue in almost either movie.
Yeah.
He had like three lines.
Thanks, buddy.
Good point. Our next image is Brian Lenning. Pretty simple, straightforward. Yeah, it's with the design laid over her face here. It's funny. Probably because I was just talking about Ex Machina, but just for a brief second when I looked at it, I saw Alicia Vikander and not Natalie Portman.
I like the oil on the on the dark side on the left.
Yeah,
like the oil that you see in the water and the mist in the place. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. Cool.
Next one is by Chelsea Kerr. This one is
not good.
Well, I mean,
it's fine. It's, you know, I think what the what happened is why there's so many of these is I think that one of the poster companies had a contest that for the European or for the UK release, and they were Garland was probably going to pick a winner or something. That's why there's so many of these. A lot of people did posters for them. This next one by Chris Skinner, Skinner illustration is just bonkers. It's a little bit
bonkers. There's a lot there.
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
Is this the first one with the flower people in it?
No, the other ones have added too.
They were a couple in the background, but there's a couple of really cool flower people ones in here.
Oh, he's got the cells replicating in the middle.
Yes, yes. Dead center.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Chris Skinner is another one who puts a lot of effort and does a lot of design work. This next one is by a guy named Christopher Shy. And if you look up Christopher Shy's work online, yeah, he works under a thing called Ronin Studios. This is probably one of his weaker pieces. It's in the same vein of what he does as far as other movies, but he's done images for The Fog, The Thing, and that were just absolutely amazing.
This one's good too, I think.
This one's fine, but for me, when looking at this in context with what his other work,
yeah,
it pales in comparison.
If you wrote Prometheus where it says Annihilation,
it would work.
That's not saying it's not good. It's
no, I understand.
It feels
interchangeable.
Like it feels like a different movie. Like the visuals here don't remind me of Annihilation. Like Annihilation had colors and pop and.
Yes. This is very much much more along the lines of what he normally does.
God.
Very monotone in color and scheme, and you know, with just hints of things here and there.
It's cool. I like it.
Yeah. David Besson's image. I like this image. It's simple. It's straightforward. I like the idea.
Skull, dude.
Huh?
The bear skull coming out of the plant.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this flower in the lower left with the teeth on it too.
Yeah, totally.
He's got some little things thrown in here and there. But I just like the way this was put together. The next one, Dawn of Kaiju 17. I couldn't find the artist's real name.
Looks like the cover for like the book adaptation of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of what it reminds me of too.
What movie did that? There was a movie that was adapted from a book that then did a book adaptation of the movie that was different than the book.
Oh, they just did like of the screenplay rather than of the actual book.
It was actually a novel based on a movie that was based on a novel, but not the novel.
I know they did that for V for Vendetta.
It was based
on a graphic novel. They made a movie adaptation and then they made a novelization, but of the movie adaptation, not of the graphic novel. So it was just weird. They don't do that too much anymore. They don't make novelizations of films anymore.
Nah. Don't market.
Yeah, because no one reads.
Exactly.
So the next one is Decomp Designs. This one feels like to me like it could have been part of the actual campaign. Like the actual official campaign as like a teaser poster.
It looks like an actual screenshot.
Yeah. I think it's just a lightly touched still image from the film.
Yeah.
You know, he's done some slight manipulation to the figure. But other than that, this next one I like a lot, Edgar Us and Sal.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
This is one of our regular guys, does a lot of work for us. And this piece does not disappoint at all.
You should get a print of this for Latham. This is his favorite moment from the film. So
it is.
You should get this for him.
I yeah. can use it for a gay pride parade too. So it's got two separate Perfect. Uses.
Twofer.
Yep.
It is a cool poster. I like it.
Yeah.
It is
a cool the next one's good too, with a nice monochrome color scheme. This reminds me of almost like what would be the cover of a graphic novel version by Eric Whalen.
Like a Mondo print.
Yeah, a little bit. But it even seems more comic-y than that to me. It seems more comic book artist.
Totally.
It's cool.
Is it three skulls she's got on
her? Yes.
And then a plant, like the one that turned into a plant, the three that died?
Yep.
Interesting.
And then in the trees on the right, there's the alligator vertically where the tree trunk comes out of its mouth.
Oh, shit.
There's a lot of little hidden stuff in there. Like, you'll notice also the tops of the trees turned into crystals. Like the crystal trees at the lighthouse.
Oh, yeah.
The guy in the pool is on the left.
Oh, yeah.
Like up against the tree.
Yep.
With the hand and everything. Good catch. Yeah, that's a cool one. That's nice.
Yeah. The next one is by a guy named Greg Ruth.
Oh, damn.
James, you'll know that. You know him.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. That's great.
That's a stunner.
Holy cow. Yeah, that's hot, dude.
The next one looks more like to Hassan's point, looks more like a book cover. James Mason, not the actor.
It actually looks like their book covers. The book cover I have for the, because I bought the trilogy in one volume, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're selling them in one whole volume now.
What are the other two called?
Authority is the second one.
Yeah.
It's Annihilation, Authority, and I can't remember the title of the
third. Not an A word.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah, it is surprising, actually.
But this pretty much was the motif for the cover. It was very straightforward, monochromatic line art, you know, kind of litho kind of situation.
Hassan, title card underneath. You have the three covers, the three original covers anywhere, like put together still? Or
no,
you...
I only have the.
It's Annihilation, Authority, and Acceptance.
It is an A word. God
yep.
damn it.
That's wrong. Sad.
Hey, I'm just gonna sign off, guys. I'll see you later.
And I gotta be honest, I never made it past. I read all of Annihilation and I read half of Authority.
Yeah, I started Authority and I after 20-30 pages, I'm like, it's not grabbing me.
Authority is much more straightforward,
yeah,
much less suggestive, much. You know, that much more cerebral than horrific or mysterious.
Yeah.
And it just was like, yeah. You know.
So this next image by Jason Felix invokes a little bit of Ex Machina, actually, because the way she's standing with that dome behind her almost makes it look like that the head of Ava.
Yeah, that's a little. Yeah. That's a little.
And then it's got the double behind her.
Yep. Agreed.
The next one is by Jock, believe it or not.
Oh, I can see that.
A Jock?
No, there's a very well-known artist named Jock.
Oh. Sorry, go on about Jock. My bad.
I'm not
going to. Latham doesn't like it because there's no lighthouse.
That's right.
Oh, it's in the water. It's sunken. Can't you see it there?
Yeah. Right. You know what this image reminds me of, Latham?
E.T.
Manhunter.
Oh, a little bit, yeah. I think he stole it from Manhunter.
Yeah, right?
And then just typed Annihilation.
Yeah, just typed Annihilation on it.
This feels like a poster you get at like a secret screening of a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it makes it like, because the story behind it makes it cool. Like when you're showing your friends, like, oh yeah.
Yeah,
it was only like 30 of these. And
Yeah.
And it's signed on the back, but you can't see it.
There are only four of us who got these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is if you take a screenplay class at college and they pass this out for you to study, and this is the cover.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me.
I like it.
The next one is Johan Brosal.
This one's awesome.
With the hand. You like that one?
Yeah, this is cool.
Yeah. Almost minimalistic.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, but it pretty much consolidates the whole story.
Yeah.
You know, in one simple image.
Yeah, it's good.
I actually like this next one as well, K-Trin. And it's just, I think, the just the design of it.
Yes.
And because it's got like a, it's got a classic Japanese illustrative brush style to it. To the,
like a
to
manga the, book almost, right?
Yes. And then, but yet everything else is very sharply digital.
Yeah. And the mirror image of the title, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that the deer thing is kind of turning into a fish at the end. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's cool. It doesn't give away plot points, but there's a lot of plot points there.
Yeah.
That's cool. Neat. I like that.
You'll really like the next one, Killian Ang. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This is
what I did this year.
Yeah.
Just this.
Yeah, Killian Ang he's one of the premier poster guys. We can't get him. He's beyond us.
Jesus. Wow, Christ. Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
On the right side?
Yeah.
And then is that the
That's nuts.
Yeah, this is crazy, man. You could spend days.
Yeah, I mean, the skull, it's like a maze.
The bottom from the top of the painting and the hand.
Wow. Crazy.
The doppelganger in the middle, that's wild.
Yeah, just it's beautiful. I mean, not only that, but his color choices are great.
It looks like the movie. I like that. Yeah. I like that they use different colors.
Yep. Then the next one, Kyle T. James. I like this one a lot as well. It reminds me almost like of a video game version. Or like a Simon Bisley painting or a Frazetta painting of, you know, what would be that?
For some reason, I immediately thought of Tropic Thunder.
Uh-huh. That's guy. Funny.
But I do like this a lot. I don't want to – I like this.
Yeah, he kind of hits all the high points. He's got the broken skull, the gator, the bear, and then
– You guys, the bear was screaming, help me.
Oh, yeah. the bear mimicking the human voice.
Nightmares.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Fucking yep. Amazing.
That's the best scene in the movie, I think.
And I remember when that happened, when I remember watching it going, oh, fuck. I was sitting by myself watching it, and I actually yelled out, oh, fuck.
Oh, man.
Because I could literally feel it doing things in my brain. Like,
yes.
Oh,
yes.
My brain is not going to let go of this image for quite a while.
That's probably one of my favorite horror moments, top five horror moments of the last like 10 years. I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah, my only issue with it is everybody got over that really quick.
Agreed. I will actually. I got no argument there. That
would have ruined like everyone I know in life would have. That would have ruined people. That would have literally made people snap on sight. You know, like
jump up and I land on my own neck and I just end it all.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Hey. Right here, buddy.
When my friend walks away and turns into a flower and the bear and the rest of them.
That's right.
I mean, it's good. I guess it's good that they weren't friends.
Yeah.
So they didn't really know just each other, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that helps, but.
Right.
So that scene was jaw dropping.
Oh. Yeah.
Next is Lauren Sue.
Her jaw. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, looks like a book cover.
Yeah, this is another one that looks would be work as a book cover.
Yeah,
Lovas Tibor is the next one. Just unfortunately, it makes me think of Christmas, but that's just
this makes me think of the runes.
Creepy Christmas.
The rune. Oh, the ruins.
The ruins. You see that movie?
Yep.
Oh my God! Yeah, I forgot about that. It's the same thing the bear did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't funny. That was another movie that was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Oh, Killer come Plants? On. Are you kidding me?
Wasn't that a Crichton novel? Was it Crichton?
No. No, it was Scott. The fuck's his name?
I don't know, but did he do anything after that?
He did something before that.
Yeah. I can't remember his name. Scott.
Sorry, I think you're thinking Speedman, but it's not Scott Speedman.
No, it ain't Speedman.
Scott Smith.
Scott Smith, yeah.
He couldn't remember Smith.
I know.
I hate when that
happened. That's why it was too basic.
So, the other book, his first book was a book called A Simple Plan.
Oh, yeah, dude.
That was made into a great movie with Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, that's a really good movie.
Yeah.
That's only two novels he's written. Wow. Okay, anyway. Yeah, Red and Green. So. Merry Christmas.
So the next one is the first of our Flower People images by Maz Khan.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's another one down the line here a little bit that's a little better on execution and done in two different colorways, but this is still solid. Next one is by Matthias Berant.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. It reminds me of like almost like of a chalk drawing.
Mm-hmm. But I think I'm gonna admit that I like the movie be better after we talked about it and looked at these posters.
Wow. Excellent.
Very hard to admit that, but I'm admitting it.
All right. So the next image is by Messy Pandas, and it's just nothing but text.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out the ATG cat, gat, cat thing. Like if
that's
that
DNA, isn't it?
Is that what it is? Is it the amino acid designations?
I think so.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense.
I'm not positive. I'm not a biologist.
But I play one on TV.
So when I first saw this, I was like, oh, I don't get it. And then you explained its DNA, and I was like, oh, I'm disappointed that I get it now.
That's an interesting roller coaster to travel.
That was
down.
A lot of emotions for a poster.
in a span seconds. Of like 30 seconds.
Yeah. There was like betrayal and like anger.
Imagine if you were in a movie theater, you have to go like get candy.
Well, because like there's words on the outside and then there's a border. I guess I'm not getting it.
Yeah, it's a good idea and probably not executed that well.
Probably done in an afternoon. That's why.
Yeah. Like a man.
Michael Rogers. I feel like this could go either way as far as like a book cover, but yeah. I like this the image. It's the central image itself. I like.
It's very Peter Panny.
Yes. Yeah. Because
Tinkerbell, the hummingbird.
Because of the hummingbird out front. Yeah.
I like it a lot.
That's a good analogy.
So this next one is by, he goes by the name Marugia. His name is Sharmilan Marugia. I actually know this guy. He's one of our UK artists.
Yeah.
This looks a lot like the book covers.
Yeah, because of that pastel-y background. This is actually a little bit more in depthy than the covers of the books.
But. Yeah, Hassan, the reason I was asking about the book covers is because the I don't know if it's the first printing or if it was just recent or whatever, but if you put the three together, the drawing it makes is actually referenced in the third novel.
Oh, wow.
That must have been in one of the earlier printings, because the three covers now are just three images.
If you put them together, the outline of it is actually referenced in the last novel itself. So,
like a Sutter Kane thing?
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. But that's why I asked because you got one volume. I didn't know if maybe they had put that image in like material somewhere.
No, I don't think they did. I should finish it.
The next one is Neil Davies. This guy does a lot of really nice portrait-based images. If you go check out his website, if you get the chance to check out his website, I highly suggest it. Does really beautiful work. Most of it's in color, usually. This one happens to be in black and white.
Why is Poe Dameron on this poster?
Right?
Should have an X-Wing in the corner.
He's there to save the day.
Looks like two TIE fighters flying up there, those little dots.
The TIE bomber. So next is Nick Charge.
Oh, interesting.
This reminds me of the Metropolis a little bit.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, for sure.
Maria Emma from Metropolis. But if you start to really look at it, you look at all the different places where it's like the image, the body has been sort of sliced and there's different imagery in the sections. It's like he put a lot of thought into this. A lot more than comes across, unfortunately.
Back in Metropolis, circus.
The next is Pushkar Chatterjee.
Wow. That's a name you'll never forget.
Wow.
Or will immediately.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I like the concept. The execution is okay.
I agree.
Very Westworld. But with flowers.
Yeah. The next one is Rio Saputra. I like this image a lot just because the way it's designed. But again, this, I feel like this could also be a book cover.
I like what you do with the type.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't like
it. Yeah. Latham doesn't like it.
Well, there's no lighthouse. We've been over this.
He's got me.
No lighthouse, no winner.
No win.
So the next one, Rory Kurtz.
He did two.
Yes. So if you go this one and then you do the next one, one is called Daylight and one is called Moonlight. And there was
interesting.
The Moonlight one was the variant. The Daylight was the regular release.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is just,
Do you feel like if you get the regular release when a variant is optional, like you lost?
No, not at all. In fact, in most cases, I feel like the regular release is stronger than the variant. Whenever I buy posters, it's based solely on if I like the image better. It is all it's on. Posters they're too fucking expensive to worry about trying to get the limited variant just because it's limited. If I don't like the way the limited variant works, then better for me, because I in this case I would have been happy with either one of these. I think they're both beautiful. I actually like the Daylight one a little better because I like the pink and the fuchsia out of there. But it's a really beautiful image. And I like the fact that the face is not filled in at all. It's just that the vines make that sort of jawline shape and then it just stops.
The snake is an interesting choice because I don't remember seeing one.
Right. I know. And I feel like they put the snake in there to give the impression of a breast.
Or Garden of Eden.
Oh, I saw it as the hands.
And yes, it's the hands.
Interesting. I like it a lot.
Johnny Snakefinger. next is Ruben Caballero.
Oh, Latham, they got you, buddy.
There's a lighthouse. It's buried in there, but it's there.
I still don't like it.
Oh, wow. I don't even know you anymore, Latham.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
I think hearing you talk about the movie has increased it a fourth star on my rating. I'm about to move it up, and trust me, that's a big thing.
That's a
life event.
I'll take it as a win.
That's something.
Yeah, that's a big win.
Next, we have Ryan Jardine. It's not overly impressive.
Yeah.
I feel like he just tossed this out.
Yeah.
Even leave the cutout corners of the images.
This next one, again, is by my buddy Scott Saslow, who does those photo, the ones I told you where he uses stock photo footage and then puts, typography over them to kind of tell the story. He's the one that did the Benjamin Button image with the baby and the Heat poster that Hassan and Latham that you guys liked of the city.
Yeah.
So this is his version for this.
That's the location, right? From overhead, I guess.
I don't know what it is quite.
Yeah,
I feel like it's either the really close up look at a flower,
or a cell, or something.
But there's no pistols to it. It's just literally the body of the flower.
Yeah,
or it's something biological. When I first initially thought about it, I thought it was like a drop of like blood that's spread in water, almost.
It's certainly abstract. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next is Sanika Maha.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Just a close-up on the pool guys.
I don't know. Why do the title cards always have to be so... If your image is already that stark, then why be crafty with the typography?
Yeah.
You know? Good call. Spell it out.
The book covers do that, and I wonder if the people who are doing that, because I've seen that a lot on these.
Yes.
They're just fans of the books, because all the books, or at least in the printings I've seen, right. Type that way, and I think they're just copying it.
They're taking another aspect and to throw into the design. Yeah,
but I agree with you, Hassan. Like this would, I think this would have been cleaner. This is that.
Yeah, right at the bottom. You know, it wouldn't have robbed
that agency. Now, just bring it down and put it at the bottom.
Yeah, yep. It wouldn't rob the image at all, and it would have, you know, it would have showcased the name, and then it would have led your eye right down to the title card. You know, that would
100%. Next is a designer named Sister Hyde.
It's a fucking cool name, by the way.
Sister
Hyde.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing wrong. I don't have a catchy name.
The skull superimposed with like the old medical drawings of a skull and a heart and a jawbone.
I like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives away a huge plot point, but yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I think it's the colors that do it for me.
Yeah. The teeth running down the middle, like a spine. So next is Thomas Riegler. You know, real simple execution, but effective.
Hmm.
Did you guys watch Doom Patrol?
No,
I'd like to.
Okay. No, I'm not going to say anything then, but there's a character on Doom Patrol. This is reminding me of them in a great way.
Oh, okay.
What is that on Netflix?
Right now it's on HBO Max.
HBO Max, okay.
Yes, sir.
A new season just dropped, right?
But they're doing the weekly thing.
Jackass.
Hassan, did the Umbrella Academy drop too?
The new one?
Yeah. No, not yet.
No, not
yet. At the end of this month.
End of this month, but it's all at once, not...
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay, cool.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Next is Tomer Hanukkah. This is another beautiful image.
Yeah, I like this.
You know, there's
this is neat, man.
Another, you know, a lot of mirroring and then also tied in with a lot of just simple design. Simple oriental-based design or Asian-based design.
Guys, where are the black dots from? Because I'm seeing in a lot of posters and I'm having a hard time remembering where they were in the film.
Me too.
I've seen the black dots show up a lot in the posters, and I can't remember where that's coming from.
Hmm. Is that the hole? No, not the hole in the lighthouse.
The hole in the lighthouse?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll go.
I like that on the right side at the top. I like that the growing out of the tree is the half guy from the pool, and then on the other side is the doppelganger in the tree.
Mm.
You know, that seems to grow out of the tree. But as the doppelganger is all in black silhouette, as it goes into the tree at the bottom, it's a human leg tied in with the tree branches.
Mm.
That's neat.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And someone's lying, staring at you at the bottom left.
Yeah. Yeah,
the head. Shit. I totally missed that guy.
Yeah.
It's Oscar. It's Poe Dameron.
I don't like him looking at me.
Yeah.
Moving on. Don't like it.
I've deleted it.
Next is Zach and White.
That's a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like this. That's cool.
Pretty much captures it.
Yeah. And then the last one here is Zishu.
Well,
it's the bear.
The bear at the pool wall.
Yeah. Okay.
That fucking bear, dude.
That goddamn bear.
I gotta admit, it was that bear thing that made me not watch the film again for this review.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going back in there.
It's messed up, man.
I remembered the how are you going to forget that movie? It's a vivid movie, and I read the book. So I figured I was all right to discuss it, but I'm like, I ain't going back.
James, you said it was one of your top five horror scenes lately. What's another one? Can you think of one?
Well, I can tell you one that made an impact. I don't know if it would be in my top five, but we were talking about The Color Out of Space, and there's a scene with a mother and a son that really fucked me up.
Yeah.
That was
okay.
That was,
there's a lot of stuff in that movie that
what's
I think
it called again? The
color out of space. The color out of space.
There's a moment in that movie that really messed me up.
There's a few. There's a few that'll I think that
I'm completely immune to that kind of stuff, so I don't usually get those kind of feels out of that stuff, but yeah. I recognize them as things that I think would throw some people a little bit. There's a more than a handful in that movie.
Yeah, okay. And I think Midsommar did a good job too. There was some stuff. I mean, yeah,
I need to watch that.
That was one that really had some pretty iconic moments, in my opinion.
Okay,
that stuck with me.
I'd say that scene from Hereditary was had to be probably one when it comes to
Hereditary was great.
Horrific things.
There's been a bunch of really that good
Hereditary.
Hereditary, yeah.
I like an Ari Aster.
Sorry,
go ahead.
What was Hereditary about?
They had the little girl and the brother and the mother.
Yeah.
The dollhouses.
Yeah.
Ari Aster and Alex Garland are both the same thing in my book. They both have a lot of potential and haven't reached it yet. That's how I feel about them.
Interesting.
I would agree with that. I mean, I'm excited to see where they both go next. I just hope they don't turn into who's the guy that did The Crow and then did Gods of Egypt?
Oh boy. Proyas.
I think Proyas is filled with potential. Did he do Sunshine? No, that was Boyle.
That was Danny Boyle. He did Dark City.
Dark City, yeah.
I love Dark City.
Dark City and The Crow are two great films.
Did he do anything else, or that was it?
Yes.
He did iRobot, and then he did Gods of Egypt.
Oh, he did iRobot? That's
great. iRobot.
That's cool. And then Gods of Egypt. Huh.
Yeah. That's not as good.
Don't watch that movie.
No, I won't.
No, I won't. Normally, this is the point where we will discuss briefly how the main film, Annihilation, would sit in amongst the director's library of works. Now, this director having only 2/3 films, because Latham, if you talk to Carl Urban, Alex Garland directed Dredd, even though he's not credited as director.
Is that the new version of Judge Dredd?
Correct.
Is that the one? That. Yeah, okay. Who plays Dredd in that?
Carl Urban.
Oh, duh. Okay,
So technically, yeah, the guy who was credited with directing that film had issues from the start with the project. And from what I understand, he stayed on the film throughout the editing process, but Garland has actually directed the film.
Okay, well.
And had a hand in editing. And
I didn't see it.
Because it's been brought up multiple times across multiple people in multiple interviews. And everyone just sort of like shies away from the real solid answer on it. But a year or so ago, there was an interview done and Garland was talking about it and said that he and the credited director came to an understanding very early on in the process that, and he didn't go into detail about what that understanding was, but the other guy got the directing credit. But he basically said that, yeah, I directed the film, but no one will ever know it.
Interesting.
What?
Yep.
Well,
I can
still
see that.
So,
I've never seen it.
So he didn't direct this film.
What?
What?
We're talking about Dredd.
I miss what we're talking
about. Dredd.
I don't know why we're talking.
Easy. We're almost done, Sleepy.
The posters messed me up.
Right. I think Annihilation's his best film. So
Ex Machina, these are Rotten Tomatoes scores. So Ex Machina has a 92, Annihilation has an 88, Dredd has a 79, and then if we include his screenwriting, 28 Days Later has an 87, Sunshine a 76.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm glad to see he's above 75 on everything. That's great.
Pretty much.
Yeah, those are good scores across the board, basically.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. This is his most accomplished film, I would say. So,
I have a hard time between this and Ex Machina because I really like Ex Machina. I realized how much I liked it again today, and I think that partially it's sold on the fact that I absolutely adore Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
I'll watch her in anything. Oh god, dude, it's the only thing that made Tomb Raider watchable. The new one.
I'm hoping they give her a better script this time around.
Yeah, me too.
She was great.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Annihilation, you should definitely check it out. It's absolutely worth your time.
Honestly, any of those movies that he was a part of, like all five of those are worth.
And so far, everything he's written novel wise, I've enjoyed as well. He actually has a short novel called Coma I have downstairs that I haven't read yet. Not the Robin Cook Coma, but something else obviously called Coma, but I haven't read yet. So, but that's never been
to do.
And that's never been adapted to anything that I know of so far. So I guess that's where we're at. Thanks to Purple Planet Music. Get your own awesome music at purple-planet.com. Please check out our website at cinementalpod.com for all of your poster images we discuss on Down the Tube segments. And don't forget to download and subscribe to Cinemental wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Or you can always listen to new episodes at cinementalpod.com. Also, you can follow us on all major social media accounts at cinementalpod. James, my friend, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. This was great. Fun.
It was great having you.
Super enjoyable.
If there's anything you'd like
to... Even though you're wrong about all the movies.
I'm going to keep agreeing to disagree with you. It's not like it or not.
You have anything you want to anything you want to plug?
No. Nothing I'm writing is ready for plugging yet.
Okay. But, all right.
I don't know. Come say hi. Follow me on social. You don't have to follow me. Just come say hello.
Drive down to Mississippi. Go say hi. Yeah, knock on his door.
It's very human.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do, you have to say, don't do that in order to stay.
I'm actually curious. You know what?
Come out to the coast.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
Will someone really do it?
No. You have no idea what you're doing.
He has posted, you know, the town he lives in, and he has posted pictures of the exterior of his home online. This is true. So.
And I live in Mississippi, so all of my neighbors have lots of guns. So it's
won't matter. How many guns do you have? That's the question.
No. I don't roll like that. I don't. Mm-mm.
Now you just said you're unarmed. Oh, that's my fine. God.
Look. You know what I'm armed with, Hassan?
What's hugs. That? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm done.
Hugs.
And wit, Hassan. What are you going to do about his hugs and wit?
That's right.
Done.
Many thanks to Hassan Latham, and as always, in the words of our friend and mentor Truman Burbank,
good afternoon, good evening, and good night.